Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 29th of October. This hour of the program, we're going to be looking at polling. A recent AP poll showed a one-point lead for Barack Obama. Today, the Zogby C-SPAN Reuters poll shows Obama at 49.1% and McCain at 44%. That's their daily tracking poll. And it says essentially that a week out, the race remains rather static. Why do we see such variation in polls? Could it be that how people decide who a likely voter is could result in such disparity among all of these polls? We're going to be talking about polling, and it is a time less than a week now before the presidential race that many people are looking at polls, and we're welcoming your phone calls as well. We're going to have two guests with us this hour. The director of communications for Zogby International will be joining us, and a professor of political science who has done a great deal of teaching and polling himself, George Bishop, will be joining us from the University of Cincinnati, the second part of this hour. As always, we'll welcome your phone calls. I think we'll have many of them this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, that's talk@wpr.org, and we start with Fritz Wenzel, Director of Communications at Zogby International. Hello, Fritz. Thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be here, Kathleen. Thank you.
So you've been doing daily tracking poll for a long time, or not?
Yes, we're in our fourth week now. We did polling that tracked all of the major primaries in the spring, and the winter, I guess. We started so early. but then we quit doing the daily tracking, and we picked it back up about a month out before the election. So when we're done, we'll have four full weeks of daily tracking.
Do you see, let's talk about today's tracking poll. Yours is Obama 49.1, McCain 44. How many the undecided voters have increased a wee bit from yesterday to 6.5%. It's hard for me to believe anybody's undecided at this point, but I guess they are.
Well, it is, and they're up a point and a half from 2 days ago. What's happening when you have a voter switch from one candidate to another? We would call this sort of person a soft supporter. They typically do not just jump right from Obama to McCain or McCain to Obama. What they usually do is a two-step into the undecided category for 24 to 48 hours, sort of a cooling off period, and then they either go back to the candidate they were supporting before because something was confirmed or something happened there, or they move forward to the other candidate. But it's very seldom that you'll see someone support McCain one day and the next day support Obama. It can happen, but it's very unusual.
Is that number high enough, 6.5, that it could be a huge factor in this election?
It could be, but that's not the only factor to look at. You need also to look at those soft supporters, and we think there's another 8 to 10% on top of the undecideds who are soft supporters who could do this two-step between now and next Tuesday. So that means roughly 15% or so of the electorate is essentially undecided, and that means we could have a huge, huge swing in the last week here. And in fact, given what's happened just in the last week, I would say that it's not only possible, it's somewhat likely that could happen, because a week ago we had Obama up by 12 points and now it's already down to 5. It was at 4 just yesterday. So every day the number changes a little bit, but Obama had a really good weekend following the endorsement by Colin Powell, and that is, as that sort of faded and other issues came into play, we have seen that lead reduce back down to where it really has been roughly more or less for the last 3 weeks or so.
Do you want to make the suggestion that it probably will stay here and he will win this race by 4 or 5 points?
Well, that could happen, but I can't predict that because polls don't give you a predictive ability. They only really measure day by day where the race is and where it has been. And the brilliance of the tracking poll helps keep people up to date with the twists and turns on the campaign trail. Here's how it works briefly. Every day we release a new number. Today, as you mentioned, it's 49.1. for Obama, 44.4 for McCain. And that includes polling from three previous days. Now, when we start our polling, and we did an hour and 11 minutes ago in New York on the East Coast, when we conclude today's polling, we will include that with the previous 2 days, and we will roll out of the sample the polling from the fourth day back. So we're capturing, every day, we're capturing the twists and turns on the campaign trail, and that's something we'll continue to do right up to the election day on Tuesday morning. We'll release our last numbers.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about soft supporters, do you have any idea how likely it is that those people, Fritz, will be going to the polls, or are they such soft supporters that they may not even vote?
No, the really soft supporters who are just mildly interested in the election aren't included in our likely voter poll.
I see.
Yeah, this is just likely voters here, and they're almost 96-97% of them are very likely, and the other 3% are somewhat likely.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that it's fair to say that most, if you look at all of the polls, all of them have shown for some time that there is a lead for Obama? Granted, we have a few days left before, but do you look at all of the polls when you go through poll results to see what everybody is saying and then come up with an average of what they're saying? Or do you believe so strongly in your own poll that yours is the one that you look at?
No, we take nothing into account except our own polling.
Mm-hmm. How do you explain disparity? Much was cited, particularly by Republicans, of that AP poll a couple weeks ago, I think, or maybe it was last week. I don't know. This has gone on for a long time. That showed it was a one-point race, and everybody said, yeah, this is much, much closer than everybody thought. You go from that to Pew yesterday with a huge Obama lead. It makes you wonder what's going on, why you could have that kind of disparity.
There are two factors at play here, and one really isn't much at play anymore. A couple, 3-4 weeks ago, we had a lot of registered voter polls out there, and we had those all through the summer. Pollsters mainly have stopped doing registered voter polls, and now they're doing likely voter polls only. As we get closer to the election, that makes a lot of sense. We never, ever do a registered voter poll, because what we try to do at Zogby is, as closely as possible, mirror what the electorate is thinking or what they would do on any given day that we take the poll. And to do that, you can only include likely voters. So all year long, we've been consistent with that. But that's one factor earlier on that was causing a lot of wiggle room. Now, the other factor is how each pollster constructs its sample. And we are very purposeful in how we build our sample. We've got 6 or 7 different factors that we consider, demographic factors, that we make sure in a national poll, every national poll, as closely as possible, reflects those percentages of the demographic groups across the country. For instance, party affiliation. We are one of the few polling companies, the few of the majors, that make sure that our sample includes 38% Democrat, 36% Republican, and 26% Independent, because through a variety of machinations and analyses, we have decided that that is the makeup of the electorate here in 2008. It's different than it was in 2004, but some polls will come in, they don't calibrate their poll or weight their poll to make sure that they always have the proper representation of Democrats to Republicans to Independents. So what will happen is one poll they release may have a 29% sample of Republicans. So right there, you've got a skew of 7 points off our poll, mm-hmm. because we always have 36% Republicans. We do that because we know that Republicans, study after study after study, year after year, has shown that Republicans are somewhat less likely to answer a telephone poll about politics than is a Democrat. So it's a natural inclination to overrepresent Democrats and underrepresent Republicans. And if you don't fix that purposely in your sample, you're going to have a result that favors the Democrat over the Republican.
Oh, that's interesting. Why are Republicans less likely to talk?
Well, it's a variety of factors. They are more likely to have voicemail. They're more likely to screen calls. They're more likely not to be available at a landline, and that's all we call our landlines. They tend to be out away from the home more than Democrats, so those are just a few factors.
Mm-hmm. And when you came up with this 38% Democratic, 36% Republican, what are you looking at? Why are you making sure it's that kind of percentage?
Well, it's a combination of what happened 4 years ago, what happened 2 years ago in the elections, and then what other demographic changes we've seen across the country. And we've made just a slight adjustment from 2004, because party affiliations do change over time, but they do not change very quickly. So 4 years ago, it was 38% Democrat, 37% Republican, and 25% independents. We've seen just a little bump up in independents, a little bump down in Republicans, but it may seem like an insignificant percentage to make or adjustment to make, but we thought it was important. We feel very confident that we're more accurately representing. But again, other companies don't do that. They have different theories on that, and they have very scholarly reasons for reaching their conclusions. We just reached a different conclusion.
I see. Are you doing polling, Fritz, of absentee votes that have been cast already and early voting that has taken place at polls?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. We do capture that. And right now, among those who have already voted, we're looking at about 17% of the electorate nationwide has already cast their ballots, either by early voting at designated locations or absentee. And Barack Obama leads by 10 points. That's down from 18 points a little bit earlier, but that lead will probably continue to shrink because Obama had such an effort to get the early votes into the bank, especially in states like Florida and Ohio. But yes, we absolutely do account for that because it's a factor in the election. And now that so many states are doing early voting formally, you have to have it in your sample.
Mm-hmm. It will go down, you say, because more Republicans will go to the polls for early voting in the next few days?
Yes. Obama had a much more organized campaign to get early voters to the polls than did the McCain campaign. We're suspecting that's why he has this lead. But we've been watching it shrink every day as the percentage of those who have already voted goes up.
Mm-hmm. And what did you make of how big a deal is this in the state of Florida for the governor to say that polls will now be open for the days before the election for 12 hours a day instead of having those long lines, having to wait 3, 4, 5 hours? People ought to be able to move in and out a little more quickly. What will that do to Florida, do you think?
Well, it's going to be interesting down there because, again, Obama does lead in Florida. Our poll released there just a couple of days ago showed that Florida has already had a huge percentage. About 20% of the votes down there have been cast
already. Oh, my.
And Obama has a huge lead among those who have already voted. But McCain leads by 6 points among those who say they are very likely to vote but haven't already. So, again, he's got a 15-point lead among those who have already voted, which is one-fifth. And then out of the other four-fifths, I hate to throw out a lot of numbers here because it's not easy to digest over the radio. I apologize for that. But
talking to people who are junkies. It's okay.
Well, okay, then I'll proceed.
Okay.
But McCain has a 6-point lead among the four-fifths of the electorate in Florida who have not yet voted. So McCain looks to be in pretty good shape there, but he's got to hold that margin as the last week here opens, because if he loses even a point or so, he risks losing the state of Florida.
Hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. Fritz Wenzel is our guest. He is Director of Communications for Zogby International, and we're talking about polling this hour of our program. Welcome to your phone calls. Lines are open, so join us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that, and that's talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now. Fritz Wenzel, Director of Communications for Zogby International, is our guest. 800-486-8655 is the number. Mary from Madison, hi.
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 My question or comment is, rather, I'm one of those who refuses to participate in polls because I think that they, instead of reporting the election, by their very nature have an influence on the election, and I think that's unethical. And so I refuse to participate. I kind of see polls coming out as often becoming self-fulfilling prophecies. And so I don't like them at all. In fact, I wish that the whole last month nobody would be allowed to poll, because I think it's more important for people to make up their own minds than to look at trends.
Fritz.
Well, the way we look at polling is much like a scoreboard at a football game reflects the score on the field, what's going on the field, but we don't really think that it impacts. There's really no evidence that it impacts it. And here's the analogy taken a step further. If you go to a football game and your team is getting pummeled, they're losing by 30 points or 40 points, it may influence you in that you may decide, don't really want to participate in this anymore, I'm going to go find something else to do, and so you may leave. But it's very unlikely that just because your team is losing by 40 points, you all of a sudden say, hey, I want to cheer for the winners, because you come to the game thinking that you're supporting someone, or maybe you just come to the game without a favorite at all, but it's the score on the scoreboard does simply reflects what's going on the field. And if you do decide to like one of the teams or the other, you're very likely not going to do it because of what you see on the scoreboard so much as what you see going on the field itself. So we feel like we're a reflection of what's going on in the campaigns, but we don't really feel like we influence people to favor one candidate or the other. We give voters enough credit to just do that on their own. We do acknowledge that if the polls do show one person leading by a tremendous amount, it could influence voter turnout. But whether that changes the actual outcome of an election or not is a whole other thing, because if the polls are anywhere near accurate, that candidate is very likely to win anyway.
Thanks, Mary, for your call. Let's go to Peter from Madison next. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how you doing?
My
question is, I'm a big 538.com reader, and they seem to always criticize the Zogby poll because it doesn't have enough Democratic registrants. You talked about how it's 38-36, but this year Democratic registration has surged, and a lot of their polls reflected more. And so they're always pretty critical of you guys for not doing that. And then also, I believe, the cell phone issue, which I think they think undercounts Obama voters because there's so many younger voters who don't have landlines. So those are my two questions. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Peter.
Yeah, good questions. We have seen in the primaries, I guess New Hampshire is a good example, where Obama was generating a lot of excitement and a lot of voter registration, but when it came to it, Obama voters did not show up at the polls. That happened in several other states, too, notably in California, too. But what we believe is just that we've modeled this correctly. We have increased the sample of younger voters and of minority voters within that structure. You have to understand that the Democrat to Republican to independent mix is an overall reflection, but it's just one of six or seven different demographic categories that we weight, and we have made other adjustments to capture this change in the dynamic with the presence of Barack Obama on the general election ballot.
And what about cell phone issue?
It's a very good question, too. We deal with this all the time.
Yeah.
We've elected not to include cell phone callers in our cell phone only households in our sample, because we have found, and other independent studies have also confirmed, that cell phone only households, people in those households, do not behave any differently politically than those who live in households with landline telephones. We acknowledge that could change one day in the future, but right now that's the way it is. Politically, the landline households behave identically or almost identically, I mean to the tenth of a percent, in the same way that those living in cell phone only households behave. So we are very confident that we've captured the overall dynamic there. And, you know, if things do change, we're certainly going to look at changing that. But cell phones represent an interesting problem for the pollsters, because our average survey runs about 40 to 45 questions. And if you're just think about how you use your cell phone and how you feel when you get an unsolicited call, and then think how you'd feel about staying on that line with that unsolicited call for 20 to 25 minutes answering questions from a total stranger. You're paying for the call. You may be in public. You may be in a situation where you don't even answer the question properly or the way you really feel, because of the people standing around you on the subway platform or at the taxi stand. So we just don't think it's a comfortable way for our respondents to react. Now, we've done one thing to compensate for this, fully believing that our telephone polling is accurate because these studies show there is no difference in how cell phone and landline households act politically. We have started polling, and we've been doing it for 10 years now, using the internet, and we've got a very solid interactive polling technology now. And the methodology, in fact, in 2006 for our interactive, our online polling, was more accurate than our telephone polling.
Oh, interesting.
So it's interesting. The industry is changing, though, no question. We're keeping close tabs on it.
What do you talk about for 20 to 25 minutes?
You ask 40 to 45 questions,
really,
on the average poll, and so you're talking about, first of all, you always start with the horse race questions, if the election were held today, blah, blah, blah. Then you ask favorability questions for each of the candidates, and when you're talking about Obama, McCain, Nader, Barr, and McKinney, are you undecided? Are there others, someone else? I mean, it's not hard to go on and on and on. Then you get into issues. Why is it that you feel that the economy is the most important issue to you, and deciding which candidate do you believe would most or better handle the economy, for instance? Or, and then you just, by the time you probe all the way down, Kathleen, you've got a ton of questions.
Mm-hmm. Is it hard for you to work for an organization? I'm sure that you probably don't talk to people about where you're going, but if you're really involved in a race, I don't know how long you've been in the business, and you have a candidate you really feel strongly about, is it hard for you to look at a poll if that candidate happens to be losing and not want to become more involved politically?
No, I come from a journalism background, so it's not hard for me at all. I am used to and have lived my adult life having no dogs in that hunt, no horse in that race. So it's something that's just a learned behavior with me. And so, you know, I think we all have favorites, but the numbers are the numbers, and, you know, they tell the story. So you just, it's in this way, polling is very much like journalism because the facts are the facts. You just report the facts.
All right. Let's go to one more call for you. John from Stevens Point. Hi, John.
Hi. I think the last caller asked my question was about the youth vote and cell phones. But instead, I'd like to comment that I don't think the football analogy quite works, because in a football game, the crowd who's rooting for the teams isn't involved in the scoring, and in an election, the poll is taking effect, or is polling the people who are actually involved. So it's a little bit of a different analogy, I think.
Well, it is. That's a good point. However, the voters, the crowd, in this case, reacts to what's going on the field. So in that way, I think we are reflecting what's happening on the field by polling the people in the crowd. It's not a perfect analogy, I'll give that to you, but I think it's as close as we can probably come, in that polls really do reflect what is happening elsewhere. They don't in and of themselves drive the game.
One final question for you, Fritz. We've been given advice from various people involved in polling and from political scientists on election night. Look at Florida, look at Virginia, look at Ohio, look at Indiana, look at, they all give us different states. Do you want to tell us what we ought to look at to see where things are going or not?
Well, you just mentioned the three. Virginia is probably the one you want to look at first. Florida is dead even. It's going to be important too. And Ohio. If the other two are McCain states, Ohio's the one you want to look at. But Virginia, we have Obama up by 7 as of 2 days ago. That's a key number, because it's a little bit close to the margin of error. It's not outside of it yet, but it's very close. And that's going to be where McCain really needs to make a push. So if I had to pick one, I'd say Virginia.
Okay. Thank you so much for being with us. Our thanks to Fritz Wenzel, Director of Communications for Zogby International. They have daily tracking polls out, and today it shows that the race remains just about what it was yesterday. For those of you who are following this day to day, the Zogby Reuters C-SPAN poll, Obama 49.1%, McCain 44.4%. A week out, they say the race remains static, but the undecided voters have increased. This is hard to believe, up from 0.2 points from yesterday, and McCain winning 87% of the Republican support, Obama 84% of the Democratic support, each candidate winning 11% of the opposing party's support, and Obama continuing to lead among independent voters. So that was interesting, huh? We're continuing polling discussion the next half hour of the program, welcoming more of your phone calls, changing guests. Our guest, Professor George Bishop, Professor of Political Science at the University of Cincinnati. He's Director of the Graduate Certificate Program in Public Opinion and Survey Research, Director, Internet Public Opinion Laboratory Department of Political Science at the University of Cincinnati, and a Professor of Political Science. He has written extensively about polling and has commented on why it is we're seeing differences in the polls that we've been talking about the first half hour. As a little thought experiment, he writes, we should ask ourselves how likely would it be that a likely voter in Gallup's model or dual model, as it is now, would end up being classified simultaneously as a likely voter by Zogby, by ABC, The Washington Post, Survey USA, etc. I'd like to think there would be a lot of overlap, but I strongly suspect, he says, there would be some notable deviations. Alas, we're not very likely to find out in this election cycle. We'll take phone calls for him, too. So just stay with us. We'll be with you momentarily. Use that email at talk@wpr.org. Professor Bishop, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yes, good morning. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, here we are a few days out. What polls are you looking at, sir? What do you think is most reliable?
Well, I look at all of them.
I do,
and,
too.
like anyone else does.
Right.
And, you know, some have, you know, reputations that go back away. Gallup, for example, has a great record of historical accuracy, so I tend to give a bit more credence to the Gallup polling organization, though there are others that do very fine work, but they have a great track record, and I look at their site every day at Gallup.com and see how things are going.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at Pollster.com and other sites that you're probably familiar with, and as you realize, some of the estimates bounce around, which we all know.
Mm-hmm. What is this Gallup dual model?
Well, the dual model, what that amounts to is that Gallup over the years has developed a set of questions to determine who is likely to vote. And they have seven questions. I don't want to go through all of them, but they have seven questions they ask. Things like, you know, how much have you thought about the election? Do you happen to know where people who live in your neighborhood go to vote? Have you ever voted before? How often would you say vote? And so forth and so on. And these seven questions that they've used for a number of years put together an index with that and predict your likelihood of voting depending on how you answer each of those seven questions. And that's the traditional likely voter model. And, of course, if you go to their site every day, you'll see an estimate using the traditional likely voter model. But what they recognize this year is a lot of new people have been registered, a lot of young people, a lot of African Americans and others have been registered and come into the electorate. These are first-time voters. And since they're first-time voters, some of the questions in Gallup's traditional seven-question index, for example, you know, have you ever voted in your precinct or election district, or do you know where people in the neighborhood go to vote generally? Some of those questions, these new people might not get a point on, and so they would be seen as less likely to vote. So what they have is they've expanded their traditional model and allowed for the new people that have come in this year. So they put out two estimates every day, one using the traditional model and one using what they call the expanded model, which makes an allowance for these new first-time voters. And if you look at that daily tracking poll, John McCain and Barack Obama tend to be significantly closer using the traditional model, and Obama tends to do better using the more expanded model. So they put both of them out each day, and which one they're going to go with in the end, I'm not sure. They'll probably just go with both of them as a way of hedging their bets.
I imagine. So you asked the question, so let's try and answer this if we can. Maybe we can't. That a likely voter in Gallup's model would end up being a likely voter by Zogby, by ABC, by AP, by Survey USA, by whoever the other firm happens to be. You say you'd like to think there would be a lot of overlap, but there might be some notable deviations. Why the definition of likely voter different among all those polling organizations?
Well, that's a big part of the problem. It's a difficult question to answer. Gallup, among the polling organizations out there, they're not alone in this regard. The Pew Center is another very good one like this, but they pretty much disclose how they go about doing this. I mean, you can go to the Gallup website and find the standard seven questions they use to determine who's a likely voter using the traditional model. The Pew Center, for the people in the press, the polls they do, they're also pretty good on disclosing that. But even Gallup doesn't disclose everything. And the point I think I made in the posting that you're referring to was that a lot of organizations don't give you the information that they use to determine who's likely to vote. And so there's variation among organizations. Some might have different questions they ask. They might not ask the seven questions that Gallup asks, or if they do, they ask some variations of that. They also, some organizations wait for political party ID, such as Zogby. Gallup organization does not wait for party identification for a whole bunch of reasons. So they each have, in other words, some idiosyncratic ways of doing things. And again, I suspect that a likely voter classified by Gallup as likely would turn out to be a likely voter, by and large, with the others. However, I suspect there are likely to be some real deviations if you could have access to the original raw data. In other words, what we need is to get our hands on the original raw data, have the pollsters disclose fully all the methods they use, assumptions they made about turnout, and all these things that are kind of, inside proprietary knowledge. And if they would disclose that, if I could do that kind of analysis, I'd be likely to find some deviations, as I mentioned in that posting. But I think the likelihood of getting full disclosure of techniques they consider proprietary is unlikely.
You think they're going to steal their methodology from each other?
I don't want to say if I'd use the word steal, but certainly let's say I have a pretty good, let's say Zogby organization, for example, that has made claims to, accuracy in predicting elections. They have had a good record, depending on which elections you look at. They might have learned some things that they regard as, inside proprietary knowledge.
Huh.
And where they make adjustments, at the final stages before they put out their final pre-election poll, they found that really helps them. And to openly share that, in other words, really fully disclose the data and, all the techniques that were used so that I could, for example, take their data set and reproduce their projections down to a decimal point, I think they would obviously think that, hey, somebody else could borrow our techniques, our methodology,
mm-hmm.
and do just as well as us. So it's competition.
Right.
Yeah.
And yet, if you have such wide variation, yesterday's Pew poll showing this huge advantage for Obama, 53-38%, we're talking with the Zogby people earlier saying it's only a 4-point lead at this point for Obama. It makes you wonder, whoa, can I look at any of these and say there's truth here? Because look at the differences between these two polls.
Well, first of all, of course, some of that difference, maybe a very big chunk of it, is due to what we call pure random error. In other words, they all draw random samples, and it's possible that some of those deviations are due to just that, random fluctuations. Just as if you, take the old classroom experiment of flipping a coin, you flip a quarter, 10 times, you might get 7 heads and 3 tails, and so forth and so on. So you do have, events like that. But the other reason I think that they vary, the ones you mentioned, goes back to what I was saying a moment ago. That is that they have somewhat different methods of determining likelihood of voting. Furthermore, as I mentioned, Zogby waits for party identification. I believe Pew does not. So you have those kinds of variations, and there are different assumptions made about turnout. One organization may assume, well, we need to screen down to the 55% we think are likely to really vote when it comes election day. And another organization may assume turnout is going to be 60%. And there are variations like that, along with the weighting and questions about likely voters, different techniques, that I think could account for, some of these differences you're noticing.
Mm-hmm. Some of the waiting, I think, has been way too long. When you look at the number of hours people have waited to vote in some of these early voting states, it's just It's too much, don't you think? People have jobs. A lot of people can't be away from their work that long, or children, or whatever. It's I understand waiting to vote, but 4 hours, 5 hours, even 2 hours is a lot.
Yeah, well, I was referring to waiting as a statistical thing.
Right. No. I was
just moving. Yes, but you're raising a separate issue about people having to wait to vote, which is, you know, something that goes beyond my normal commentary range. But, yes, it's unfortunate, and we should have learned from the previous elections that we should have more poll workers and more machines and all the rest of it. And, you know, that's up to the states, the states of Ohio and Wisconsin and others to, you know, do their job. And staff up precincts properly. They learned in 04 in Columbus, for example, and Cuyahoga County up near Cleveland. They had huge lines there for hours. You know, they should have been prepared.
Right.
And there's a whole political story to that,
right.
You know, depending on which party was controlling the state government at the time.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, do pollsters adjust their polling when they look at what's happening with absentee votes being up, what's happening with early voting being up in states that allow that? Do they adjust their polling accordingly? Because it is showing that more people are doing both those.
Well, you know, I don't know firsthand what some of these organizations are doing. I suspect many of them are. Certainly the Ohio poll that's done here out of the University of Cincinnati adjusts for that. They do have questions in the poll that determine whether people have already voted, and they make adjustments based on that. I presume any, you know, sound-thinking polling organization these days is going to have to do that because it's become such a huge factor now, early voting, absentee voting. And it's going to pose a particular problem on Election Day for the exit poll people, you know, when they do polls on Election Day and they, you know, sample every, say, fourth or fifth person coming out of a precinct. How are they going to adjust? Because all they're doing is interviewing people who voted on Election Day. And in the past, it wasn't a big problem. But now, since it's become such a substantial percentage of the electorate, in Ohio, for example, we expect as many as possibly a third of the people may vote on Election Day. And if that's the case, and you're doing an exit poll sample in Ohio to project the election, it would seem to me you're not going to get that information by definition on Election Day, so you're going to have to do some pre-election polling. You're going to have some way to adjust the exit poll figures for what the issue that you've raised.
Interesting. You know. So where does Ohio stand today, sir?
Well, it depends a little bit on which website you
I'm sure it does.
prefer to look at. Of course, I look at pollster.com, and Ohio is now colored light blue. It moves back and forth between being yellow toss-up and light blue leaning toward the Democratic candidate Barack Obama.
And do you think that's where it is? Which is,
at
you know,
moment,
who knows?
At the moment, it's one of those things that if the election were held today, Barack Obama would carry Ohio. But the election's not being held today. And and of course, John McCain and his people think they have something to say about that. And from what I've been reading this morning, they're going to put the vast bulk of their resources, visits, and just about everything you can think of into three states, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the big three that they're going to focus all their energy on. And if they can get two of those three, they have a chance. And so I think that's what we're going to see.
Phone calls for Professor George Bishop in just one moment. And our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor George Bishop, our guest, director of the Graduate Certificate Program in Public Opinion and Survey Research, director of Internet Public Opinion Laboratory in the Department of Political Science at University of Cincinnati, where he is also a professor of political science. To your calls, Peggy from Monona, hello.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to know how important you think that the Bradley effect is. There are a lot of people who feel that once people go into the polls, they may vote against Obama just because he's black. I just finished publishing Connecting the Dots, Government, Community, and Family, and I outline a number of studies that show there is very strong continued discrimination in this country in police arrests of people while they're driving, in the housing market, etc. And the question I haven't heard, which somebody pointed out to me, which is not are you a racist, but how have you been affected in this country by the racial conversation? Because anybody who grew up in this country has been affected one way or another by that conversation, and even unconsciously, it may affect them when they go to the polls.
Well, you've raised a very complicated question, and one that is subject to a lot of controversy and discussion in the professional polling committee, as well as in the academic committee, scholars who have studied the Bradley effect. There's not agreement on this. There are people who say, well, you know, there was some evidence of that thing years ago when Tom Bradley ran for mayor of Los Angeles, and when Dinkins ran for, you know, mayor of New York, and Wilder in Virginia as for governor. And some of the recent scholarly papers suggested that that effect doesn't exist anymore. However, there are others who maintain that it still does exist. And I consider myself a skeptic. I'm not sure which way it goes. I have some thoughts on it that I think maybe others haven't taken into account yet. First of all, I don't myself, this is just speaking for myself, I suspect that it would be a very tiny, tiny percentage of people who would, I think, say they're voting for Obama and then end up voting for John McCain. I think if the Bradley effect is there, it exists in a couple ways. One is among those who either say they're undecided, because that becomes a way of not telling you who they're going to vote for, and it's possible they're influenced by the racial factor, but they're not going to, even if they're conscious of it or not, they're not going to disclose it. And I would particularly want to be looking there at, for example, older, white, less well-educated Democrats who everything about them would tell us they would vote for the Democrat, but they're going to, you know, be voting for John McCain. But they're not going to tell you. Andy Kohut of the Pew Center raised it in another way, the Bradley effect in the New Hampshire primary, when Hillary Clinton upset Barack Obama. And his speculation was that the problem there was that the kind of people who tend to have unfavorable racial attitudes with certain demographic characteristics, older, white, less well-educated. I'm not picking on all older, white, less well-educated people, but that pattern of demographics, those people tend to have less favorable racial attitudes, and they were less likely to agree to be interviewed either in the pre-election polls in New Hampshire or in the exit polls. So some of it is hidden there. So that's still a possibility. We have an experiment running now at Cincinnati, incidentally, at our Internet Public Opinion Laboratory, where we're manipulating racial factor in a way that we may be able to test whether it's there or not. More about that after the election. The other thing that I think has not been raised in any of the national discussions about the Bradley effect, and this is something that has occurred to me just recently, is given all the economic indicators, the difficulty this country is in economically, you would think the Democratic candidate would be running a lot better against John McCain, who has been linked to George Bush by the Obama campaign and others, I think, fairly successfully. If you agree, for the sake of argument, that that's the case, then why isn't Barack Obama up ahead by, you know, 10 to 12 percentage points? In other words, his lead should be more substantial. He should have closed the deal a while ago. And the fact that it still remains competitive in key states and nationally suggest that perhaps, this again, very speculative, that if the Bradley effect does exist, then Obama's present lead over McCain is not as wide as it could be if the racial factor weren't present.
Thanks very much for your call, Peggy. Let's go to Dave next from Menominee, Michigan. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thank you. Well, I think if we had the fairness doctrine brought in, some of these polls might read differently. But I called to say that I absolutely think these polls are out. Some of these companies are there absolutely to influence the electorate. In 2006, at the end of 2006, Democrats took over. January of 2007, they were in office. By March, there was polls out saying, are you satisfied with Congress? And those polls have been on television ever since. During the nomination process, all the polls were dominated by, will he pick Hillary? These people like Hillary, and these people think he should choose Hillary, and will he choose Hillary? And now we have, you know, these polls that are just inflated, and I think it's to really cook up complacency. People are going to look at them and say, oh, Obama's got it. I'm not even going to bother voting. So everybody, make sure you vote. And I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Well, let me just pick up on the latter point of what you were saying. I'll try not to be as long-winded as I was in response to the previous caller. That could be a double-edged sword. If if the polls are just say suggest Obama's going to win, then yes, some McCain supporters may sit it out, but Obama people could be complacent and sit it out too. So it could cut both ways. The second point I would like to make is that I think at least the reputable national media polls, certainly they do polls very early in 07, like you suggested. It gives them something to talk about and write stories and so forth, until the next election. But to suggest that they might be deliberately trying to influence the election in favor of one party or candidate or the other, I think that's questionable. It seems to me a lot of their reputation rides, the whole enterprise's reputation rides on the accuracy of their calls. So when we look at what they say in their final pre-election polls, what we're looking at now the last few weeks, last couple of months, is a lot of what I call volatile noise. But when you look at the actual results they put out on Sunday and Monday right before the election, compare that on Wednesday morning. I call it the Wednesday morning reality check. If you look at that, you'll find they have to be held accountable then. And the Gallup organization has done quite well over the years. And I would look at some of these organizations you think are shaping or influencing things. See how well they come out, because if all they're doing is biasing things, then they may not get it right on when you look at the results on the Wednesday morning after the election. So their reputations or ability to sell polls to other kind of commercial clients rests on their reputation for accuracy. Mm.
Thanks, Dave, very much for the call. Yeah. Janet from Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. This might go to the statistics the previous half hour, but I just wanted to comment briefly about what a tremendous change there appears to be in the gap between Obama and McCain in the last week. I mean, going from a 13% to 14% to a steady 4% to 5% in just a week's time, when we have a week left, seems very impressive to me, especially when McCain doesn't really have any TV support. He only has Fox News. He has minimal radio support. And even when you poll 75% of people going to polls again, we'll say that the media is slanted against McCain. I mean, Obama has enough money to buy 30 minutes on all the national networks from all this money he's getting to his campaign, which, of course, he doesn't make public who his sources are. But to get back to the initial question, has this happened before where you see this steady 10% gain so close to the end of the election?
I mean, the steady 10% gap?
Mm-hmm. The tightening, so it's 4%
well,
now.
Well, historically, depending on whether it's an incumbent running or a non-incumbent, I mean, you often see some tightening in the final week. There has been some evidence of that in the last couple days or so. I'm not sure it's a trend just yet. I guess if I see in the next day or two further tightening, then I would think some type of last-minute trend is developing. I mean, historically, somebody who's ahead as much as Obama is ahead in October typically wins, okay, unless there's some October surprise, as they call it in the political world, some international episode of some kind. So I would give it another couple days and strongly recommend taking a look at the Gallup.com website to look at their daily tracking polls and see what the trends are there. If you see further tightening in the next 48 to 72 hours, then there's probably some trend developing. If it disappears, the tightening we've seen the last few days, it kind of bumps back up and Obama opens up a little wider lead again, then I think it's probably over.
Thanks, Janet, very much for your call. Bob is next, and we're running close on the end of time here. Bob from Eau Claire, hi.
Hi, thank you. I was just going to make a comment. I think the polls are biased, as well as the press, biased to a two-party system. And I think it's not really going to be the racial factor, the Bradley effect. It's going to be independent voters. It's going to be people that want another party, because especially after what's happened with the bailout, low approvals for Republicans and Democrats. No one's really saying this, but I would just like to hear your opinion.
Well, to be as brief as possible, certainly the independents, carry the balance of power here, and many of them may be libertarians, as I'm reading between the lines in your question, who question the whole approach to the bailout and so forth and so on, and would prefer another party to vote for and so forth and so on. But that however many people are truly undecided at this stage of the game, we're down probably to about 3 to 6%, I would guess, of truly undecided. They carry the balance of the power, and of course, it doesn't matter what the national trends are. It matters what happens in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Florida, and a couple other close places, and that's where the independents can make a profound difference if they show up and they vote. And of course, if they're so disenchanted with the two-party system, maybe they don't show up to vote.
So if we're going to follow polls, they're going to become more and more predictive in the next, over the weekend, would you say? Or
oh, yes, it's the final. They all know they have it on the line then. You know, they have what I call the Wednesday morning reality check. You can do put all this other stuff out, and there's it's flopping around over the, you know, each week and each day. But the one they put out Sunday and Monday, those are the ones to really pay attention to, because now they have it all on the line. They increase their sample sizes. They tighten their likely voter screens and all the other little arcane proprietary stuff they do in-house, because they know we're going to be able to check it on Wednesday. Mm.
And that holds true for the state surveys as well as the
Absolutely.
National?
Absolutely. There's a lot of them this year. Been a ton of them in Ohio. Your place, I guess, has been written off,
right,
more or less,
yeah,
as going for Obama. So I don't think you'll see as many. But we have a ton of them that have been done in Ohio. So we have a bunch of people to hold accountable next Wednesday morning.
Thanks so much for being with us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our guest, Professor George Franklin Bishop. He is director of the Graduate Certificate Program in Public Opinion and Survey Research, director of the Internet Public Opinion Laboratory in the Department of Political Science at the University of Cincinnati, where he's a professor of political science. Just a reminder, tomorrow our show goes to Marquette University. We're going to be speaking the first hour with journalists and with political analysts. Mike Ushuaie will be joining me, and the second hour, Marquette students will join us, speaking about the youth vote. We're going to center on youth vote the second hour, and we'll have people from the major political parties with us as well. So if you can't be there, then listen. It's going to be a fun couple hours, pretty close to the presidential election. So we'd like to have you listen, and we're looking forward to meeting many of you tomorrow. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the program, and to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production. And thanks for all of your calls, everybody. News coming up, and we'll continue with our Wednesday conversation here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.